If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF.
And welcome to JFG Tonight. Well, it seems that we are live only on YouTube and yes, on X, finally. Hello. So it seems that we can have multi-streaming tonight. It's working and we are in the safe protection of a central restreaming service. So hopefully we don't get the bandwidth issues we've had in the past. Pookie says, God has decided that I will watch the show live. At goddamn fucking regular speed. Okay, calm down. Everything's gonna be fine. We will talk today about a very important lawsuit, which is the RTTL lawsuit that they, of course, expected that would have had to happen. Basically, a Jewish woman who claims she has been racially discriminated and being refused entry into the association. We will discuss the details of the complaint. And what is to be expected, what is to be hoped. I do believe that the RTTL is in a good position. I do believe that the complaint is weak. And of course, in the current justice system, you never know, because you can end up with a Marxist judge anywhere in America. But I believe that they have a strong legal case on their side to win this lawsuit. Pookie says, bro, talk faster. Holy shit.
Well, this is JF at 2X. Hello, how are you doing, Pookie?
You want me to do the show like this? I don't think I can. Today, I continued the editing of White People Food. I made a decision. I shortened a little bit the width of the pages from 8.5 inch to 8.25 inch because it's a more standard system for hardcovers. So I decided that the hardcover will be the main item that I will sell of White People Food. I will also offer a paperback, but the problem is the paperback will not be much less pricey than the hardcover. So I will say you will want the hardcover for $12 more. You're going to get the hardcover. So it's looking like $79.99 for the hardcover. Maybe I can have the paperback at $66.67.99. Those are the prices I have to put because it's such a massive work and printed on premium paper for the pictures of the food. It's just the price that it boils down to. So this is what, if you can't afford this level, you will be able to purchase a digital version that will be more in the $20 range. But that is just what I have to do. It is a very demanding book to print, but I think it deserves a hardcover. And the hardcover isn't really much more pricey because most of the print cost comes from the premium pages inside the book, and those are the same in the paperback or hardcover. The hardcover extra is just a thicker, more protective cover for it. So that will be, not right now I have to readjust everything to the standard hardcover format, which is just recentering of things and tightening of pages. That is where I'm at. Now that it's public, I can confirm that the popular gambling website Duel will be posting Dalton Etherly's $1 million bond. So it seems that Chud the Builder will be taken out of jail by a gambling website. I find it fascinating how the gambling website, this kind of free money, it can sometimes do things surprising that the rest of the institutional system wouldn't do. And although I object to gambling, and I would tell you for your own good, do not engage in gambling. It's never good. Do you know anyone who's ever been happy from gambling? I mean, maybe if you win from a $2 ticket and you win $1 million, maybe you're someone who retains a good experience of gambling. But gambling is massively destructive for 99.9% of the people who do that. Though, I appreciate when gambling companies do things in society that others wouldn't have done. Just like I loved how Jeff Epstein was messing up the academia in his own way. I like these out-of-the-box thinkers. And if you run a gambling website, you kind of don't care about your reputation, and you kind of don't give a shit about a lot of things that companies normally give a shit about. And in this case, we might have a Chad the Builder at least going through the trial free, so he can have... So at least if he has an unfair trial, at least he can have a couple of years of life enjoying some degree of freedom. Justin McDaniel says, nice hairstyle, looks more professional. Yeah, I've decided to go dry hairstyle. I mean, it's not even a hairstyle. It's more like, without me touching my hair, that's how they look. But yeah, I decided to cut on the gel. I decided, in the face of young females, I felt like, okay, that's the point at which my hairstyle is from another generation. So I was like, okay, now I'm having sex with females half my age, and they could almost be my granddaughters. And so it's like, I can't have this haircut from the 90s. It just doesn't work anymore. And so I had to adjust to the real world. Richard Fitz says they should get all their money back. Yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, generally a bail, you get the money back unless the person you bailed out runs away. It's going to be very hard for Chad the Builder to run away. He's going to be under intense surveillance. The judge has added conditions like an ankle monitor and that kind of stuff. So it looks like when judges do this from the outset, you can know that they are already hostile to the defendant. And I do not expect a fair trial at all. Though, in the end, if one jury is truly convinced that nothing wrong has happened, we might have something. B sends a super chat through the XMR system. Thank you so much. He says, I went to email you a useful link, but I found, but I see that you use Gmail, JF. Bro, your threat profile is way too high to use Gmail. You are just asking to get attacked, and all of your messages are being surveilled for sure. Please switch to a private one like Tuta, etc. I won't. Because if you have anything that you want to send me that would get me in trouble or that would get you in trouble, I don't want you to send it to me. And, you know, I'm a public person. People have so much misconception. It's like, I cannot escape the government or anything of the kind. I've done at times jurisdictional switches to escape unjust local government. But I can't, I'm not the leader of some revolutionary movement, okay? So it's like, it's so annoying to me because these people don't understand. I'm a public person. I give my opinion on the public space every day. It won't change anything if I have a private email because I cannot engage in a conversation with you, even in private. Because if I was to engage in a conversation with you that is anyhow close or remotely close to criminality, that would probably mean that you're a Fed and you're trying to entrap me. And so I will not, even if I'm in a private conversation, say anything else than I would say publicly. Okay? So it's like, no, there's no function in me having a private email. You want me to manage a private email to receive your loser comments about whatever conspiracy you're onto? It's like, no, I've decided in life that I'm a public person. Now, I'm interested in hearing about anything you have to say that's within the legal sphere. And I can interact with you guys on that basis. But if you're into some other sphere, I'm not your guy, bro. Go away. It's actually a feature to have a Gmail. That way, at least you know I'm not into anything shady. It's so annoying because you have all these parasites in your life that appear when you're a public person. And they're just there to fuck things up. They're just there to give you trouble. And I constantly have to get away from these people, constantly have to leave friends behind just because they're too fucking stupid to understand you're acting like a fucking fed, bro. And it's probably what they are. John Drake says the government has shit running on metal, most likely anyway. No email service is safe anyway. To an extent, because the ultimate issue is that the person sending you the email, even if you're end-to-end encrypted, you could be the Fed. So it's like, no, I'm not going to do anything magical out of a private email service. End-to-end encryption, by the way, is practical in certain situations. Not mine. Not mine because I show my face every day on the public space. The government knows where I live. So there's nothing special that will happen in a private discussion with JF. The only thing special that happens in private with me, you know what it is. You know what it is, my bros. It involves my dick. And you have to be a woman. If you would like to support the show, use the dollar button under the regular chat or use the Streamlabs or XChat links in the description below. Those are my three favorite ways to receive support for the show. And if you enjoy the analysis, don't hesitate to join us on Patreon. You will get access to our private chat room on Discord. I am available. If I don't sleep, I'm available to answer any question you may have during the month on the private platform on General Patreon. That's our channel on Discord. Or you can just join the Discord channel if you don't want to support us on a monthly basis. You can still join the public conversation on our Discord. The links are in the description below. Justin McDaniel specifies a female woman. Yeah, that kind of woman. I believe that this lawsuit shows the importance of what RTTL is doing. So let's do a review of first, who is Arval? What is happening with RTTL? And I've commented on Twitter yesterday, it's important that we recognize the importance of the moment. And I would love if everyone could put their differences aside. And this is not a comment to Nick Fuentes. But both Nick Fuentes and Arval, I think they should leave out the petty stuff here because this is important. It's the question of whether the legal model of RTTL, Return to the Land, can exist and can flourish in the American legal context. And it's a subtle issue. And it's an issue with which the system, the institutions, and the legal system have been at war with this kind of developments for a long time, since the 60s, 70s, civil rights movement, keeping people who want to live with one another from living with one another. It's a very important question because it touches the freedom of association. And we are, you could argue, we are in a very special moment with the current Supreme Court justices. If it can happen that we slightly review, undermine, or slightly loosen up some of the assumptions that have been acquired through the civil rights moment of America, And we start realizing, well, we have been massively violating other liberties on the basis of the liberty to live among others, which is not a liberty. It's never been a liberty guaranteed by the first by any of the amendments of the Constitution. You are not entitled to the presence of others around you. But this is exactly what the civil rights movement has been creating. So who is Aryabhatta? Well, Aryabhatta is a guy we know from so long ago. I mean, it's fascinating to see his meteoric rise as he is undertaking this massive legal fight. Because we knew Aryabhatta here on the show, on the public space, years before anything like RTTL came up. Aryabhatta was a thinker, philosopher, who was, if I remember correctly, interested in nihilism, questions of God. I think he has changed a lot since, but those were his focus. And he was talking to us on the public space about things like rationality, theism, philosophy, ethics, and he was part of this whole movement that in 2016 to 2019 of these early YouTubers who were rising on the question of white identity. So a very interesting guy with a complex story. A lot of people are pointing to his past, and apparently he's been doing some wholesome porn with a single woman with whom he was a boyfriend of hers. And when people come at me with this, I'm like, I don't care. First, you can make errors. Secondly, this doesn't, like, I could do porn right now. I don't have a strong moral objection to it. It's just that it's unreproductive sex, so I hate it. But like, I'm sure I could see a deal in my life in which, okay, porn, but I come inside of you every time. I could do it. It's not something that I'm super morally objected to. I'm morally objected to porn mostly because it's a form of non-reproductive sex, and it leads to a lot of non-reproductive sexual excitation in terms of the product being delivered to people. So that's my issue with porn. When people try to get me to cancel Aryabhatta, I just don't get it. You're talking to the wrong guy. I'm an edgy motherfucker. Justin McDaniel says, justice isn't blind, it's anti-white. Unfortunately, the law will be interpreted through the anti-white social morality to be used as a pretext for harming whites as usual. Absolutely. John Drake says, freedom of association is part of common law and anti-communist. Absolutely. So this has been completely blown away by the decisions of very leftist Supreme Court decisions that have been taken as the legal system was slowly veering toward liberalism and communism. So a great guy, Aryabhatta, who eventually in 2023 starts having these ideas with a bunch of people around, can we develop a legal structure in which we will have just the ability of, one, pushing for European culture, white descendant culture, call it whatever you like, the way other groups are pushing for their own culture. Have you ever heard of a Jewish association who is being sued because they didn't let a person of another race or religion join their association? Never happens. And so it exists out there, associations that are centered on certain cultural heritage. But then there's the question of the Fair Housing Act and the idea that sales of land in America are subject to this obligation of not being racially discriminatory. And that has many components to it. There's the sale itself that cannot be racially discriminatory. And there's the even announcements. You know, that there are some big companies of real estate who have been sued historically for making their ads in a way that would target, or that would maybe unintentionally, but that would have a disparate impact about who receives the ad. And it would be mostly white people and less black people. That kind of stuff has existed, and there's legal precedent for this kind of lawsuit. And then it also exists at the mortgage level. There has been many practices where eventually banks discovered, I believe it might have been in the 90s or even earlier, they discovered that ultimately if you know the zip code where someone lives, you can easily know if they're going to pay their mortgage. And it's like, okay, well, wow, this zip code, people just pay their mortgage. This zip code, people don't do it. And it's, to me, it's a very wrong direction that America has adopted by barring all of these practices. Because it's like, at this point, you're into real information gathering. And if the zip code contains information, then you should be able to use it. But that is not the current state of law under the Fair Housing Act and other jurisprudence that has been stacked up on each other by the Supreme Court and their decisions based on the 14th Amendment. So that is the context in which when you talk about lands, it becomes something else in America. It's not like selling your car. You might be able to do things about selling your car that you wouldn't be able to do if you sell a land. Now, there is still much disequilibrium in America about racially who ends up buying land successfully. But it's like these laws are kind of, they're outlawing a state of mind, really. Because in the end, disparate racial impacts are unavoidable realities of economics. Even if you are not, even if in your heart you have zero racism, in the end, just trusting money, just selling to people who have money or who can have mortgages, you're going to have a racially disparate impact. So that's where the system is untenable. The things that have been established by judges across the decades is unsustainable because it really forces people to act outwardly in a way that hides their real intent, which is the real intent of a seller is generally just to get paid. And the real intent of a bank should be, at least normally, to have the people they give mortgages to pay back. But we can't have this state of thing because people have to act in constant self-deception about what is their true motivating factor in buying in some place. And the entire real estate market, all built around, that's a good neighborhood. Now you have the anti-racist rising against this and saying, well, you know, good neighborhood is a dog whistle for racial white solidarity. And you know what? It is. Let's face it, it is. Why is there so much obsession across America for good neighborhoods? It's not. The good neighborhood isn't really the hipster burger restaurant at which you like to go, which is pleasant, but it's not really what people mean by good neighborhood. There is such a focus on good neighborhood in America because people are afraid. People are afraid that they will be stuck in a place where they will be subjected to anarcho-tyranny of a strongly racial nature most of the time. That is it. So you know, everyone has something right about it. I understand the banks are right to want to use any sort of information they can that's probabilistically tied to whether the person will reimburse. The sellers are understandably worried about whether certain buyers will be able to pay. And the buyers of the real estate market are totally understandably developing all these dog whistles to find ways to eventually end up in these hipster neighborhoods where there's not going to be criminality. And guess what? These hipster neighborhoods are white neighborhoods. 99NoFX says, genuine question, how many races do we have? Well, I've said it, back in the time where it was where race was a big subject on the internet. You can divide the whole of planet Earth in 5 races, or you can divide it in 700 races. You choose. It's like people think that there's some contradiction there. There's none, because ensembles of ancestry and ensembles of genetic closeness nuclei are subject to an embedded structure of that sort, which it's not because something can exist inside something that it doesn't exist anymore. Just like you can say, how many parts are there in a car? Well, you can say there's 6 parts, the tires, the engine, the transmission, or you can say there's 700 parts. The gear one of the transmission, the pin one of the gear one of the transmission, the pin 2, the pin 3. You can divide a system into arbitrary subcomponents, which doesn't deny the entirety of the tree structure that defines this thing. So the answer is there's however many races you want to count, literally. You can count it down to the number of single families that there are in the world. And yeah, you're going to find genetic distinction between that family and that other family. Or you can go at a more global rate and say, no, we're going to make ensembles around all Europeans, all Africans, all Asians. There's as many races as you want. So going back to RTTL, this is the state of the real estate market. It's a market under tension, under self-deception. Everyone lies to get to the promised land, a good neighborhood. And it's so sad. You know, as a Canadian, everything is a little more relaxed in Canada. You know, Canada is a cucked country and a very, very liberal, anti-racist country. But weirdly, in Canada, there's less of a trouble with this. In the US, it's a very, very demanding thing to find a neighborhood in which you'll be able to afford the home. In fact, this doesn't exist anymore. There's no more neighborhood where you can afford the home and be sure that you will live among people like yourself. In Canada, it's very easy, actually. And if anything, those places that are entirely populated by whites in Canada are the cheapest places for some reason. Probably for some reason because the cities are more diverse and they have these rising, bubbling real estate market. Whereas you can go to any small town in Canada, as long as you're 45 minutes away from a Walmart, and you're going to be effectively in a white ethno state. So I look at the American system with extreme angst. I understand the angst of Americans who are being squeezed because there's a whole layer of the white population in the US who cannot get what they would want. And so they end up in unoptimal neighborhoods as opposed to good neighborhoods. And John Drake says, yes, you can go any place in Toronto as a white person. You cannot say that about any large city in America. Exactly. So America is under much bigger tension. And the Second Amendment adds to it, which is that you never know if you're stuck with an aggressive encounter anywhere in America. You never know if the other person has a gun. In Canada, of course, you can be scared that if you go in the roughest neighborhoods, maybe someone has a gun. But you can definitely know that most people don't have a gun. And that is very different. It changes a lot. Because then it's like, okay, if I go to Toronto, I don't expect to die. I expect that maybe the worst thing that will happen is I'm faced with some mental patient with a knife, maybe. And so I keep my distances and I keep thinking strategically, because knife attacks are much more defendable against, you know, that there's all sorts of ways to escape them, depending on how much management you have to do on your mind. Like, am I carrying my children? Am I alone? There's all sorts of tactical ways in which you can basically make sure you can never be attacked by a knife. With a gun, it's different because it's much more quick, much more remote. There's really no way in America you can walk around the street and be absolutely certain that you won't get shot, or even by a stray bullet, or shot by a criminal. Farzan says, there is no real estate market. There is a real estate finance market. No one can afford to actually purchase a home. A minority can afford to finance. Yes, that is one of the big problems, which is the... Meanwhile, as all of these problems exist, you just stacked another problem, which is absolutely true. It's that the real estate market has been co-opted into a fiction of speculation. And so people are dependent on this on their lives. Mortgage are being slow transferred into rents. Rents that you basically can't afford. You know long term that there's going to be some economic event that messes your mortgage up. People are taking basically this bet that they will have their job for 30 years, which is a very, very bad bet to take. It becomes a form of gambling for finance institutions who can afford to buy and hoard all of these houses. And ultimately, what you find yourself is with rents disguised as mortgage. So that's the real estate market as it stands. And Arval and his friends, back in 2023, you know, coming out of the big rise of right-wing white identitarian thinking of the 2016s, 2016 to 2018, they start this association. And they build a legal structure, the goal of which is to reinforce European heritage and to perhaps develop a way for communities of like-minded people to live together. And the structure is as follows. They have an association. This association is a point of entry. And you can enter this association as a member because you support the cause of European culture. So that's their association. It does not sell land. It does not own land. It does not force sales or block sales. It is an association of people who believe in European heritage. And then they have something else. A separate corporate entity that is an LLC that owns land. Now, how do they arrimate all of this together? Well, it seems to be, having analyzed the case, read the complaint, and of course, you cannot trust this complaint. This complaint is full of lies about how RTTL works. So RTTL is this association. It's about European heritage. Then there's another independent entity that is an LLC, which is saying, we have lands and we are putting it as a condition. If you want to live on lands with us, if you want to join the LLC, buy a share, you need to be a member of RTTL. You need to be a member of this association, which pushes for European heritage. Now, it's a very subtle organizing principle. First, you cannot say that RTTL is engaged in any sort of land sale. It is an ideological association like there can be. So in my view, the legal strategy here is first to get RTTL out of this legal case. I believe that what a lawyer will very likely propose is RTTL can get out of this case right away. It's a very weak complaint, and I'll tell you why later. But RTTL is just an association. They're not responsible for how the separate LLC has decided to make it conditional on their sales to be a member of RTTL. RTTL is operating as an independent entity, and some other LLC has apparently decided to use their membership to sell within their members. Now, it's also not clear to me that those are sales in the usual meaning of sales. It would appear that the LLC is effectively not selling the lens, but it is saying you are acquiring a share of us and you are now a member of us. We still own the land. So the land hasn't been sold. You are merely joining a private club. This private club happens to own land. The land is not yours. I believe that the people who live on this land, they don't pay property taxes. They probably still pay it through the LLC. So it's a private club that happens to own land and that doesn't sell it. But it can invite you as a member. And if you meet some conditions, you will be living in that community. So that is the legal structure that has been adopted by these people. I believe it's a sound legal structure. It looks to me like you cannot take the whole. You cannot take both RTTL and the LLC and accuse them of some sort of conspiracy against civil rights. Because in the end, the lands aren't sold. So we're not into the question of, is land being sold here? No land was even sold to white people. And I believe that will be the basis of a good case, which is RTTL first never sold land. So Fair Housing Act does not apply. You've just been rejected because they estimated, based on your responses, that you were not fully into the defense of European rights, of European culture. Now, so the lady is making the case that she considers herself white, but that she is of Jewish descent and that she has a black husband and that therefore her children are biracial. She is saying that when she applied to RTTL, she has been asked all sorts of questions on the questionnaire that was, What heritage do you identify as? She took screenshots of everything. So this was a setup from the beginning, by the way. She took screenshots of the whole process. Oh, well, they're asking me about what my heritage is, and they're asking me who I would want to live around. So this was all a framing. And by the way, it's been a framing for so long, because when RTTL started being featured on TMZ and all this mainstream media, I noted something very weird. First, why are the mainstream media suddenly giving attention to this small project? You know, however I like the project, it's not a project that matters overall nationally. And yet TMZ was churning out coverage of this project like it's very important. Here's what I would propose as an interpretation. I believe that what's been happening is that TMZ was part of some sort of conspiracy. Someone paid for these mainstream media appearances to prop up the idea that this was a whole racist organization. And the framing was definite. Like they were, where Arval wasn't saying, no, only whites can live among us. He wasn't saying this at all. But he was in journalistic interviews where the journalist was saying this, always. And the titles, the headers, and all of the framing was built to frame Arval. And that you should learn something about this, the people on the regular chat right now, which is that sometimes they give you attention because they want to frame you. And I believe this is what happened to RTTL. Now, I'm not saying, therefore, never engaged with the media. Sometimes you still want to do it, because sometimes your goal is to send a message And sometimes your goal is to outlive this attempt and survive this attempt at attacking you. And I believe that if there's anyone who's intelligent enough to bring this football to the goal point, it's Arval. Arval has demonstrated through this that he was set up for this. He is intelligent. He is organized. And he seems to have the support of a massive amount of people, enough that we have our best shot here at making this work. And we have a shot in a relatively weak complaint, to be honest. So this is the moment. This is why it's so important that the little infighting in the right be put aside here. This is very important. It's a legal precedent that will revert some aspect potentially of the Civil Rights Act, or at least the way the Civil Rights Act and how the precedents of the Supreme Court have been interpreted up to now. Because up to now, I mean, we're down to forcing bakers. We're down in America to effectively force bakers to bake a cake where they disagree with the act of speech that the cake is. We're at the point where we don't have First Amendment rights for artists and cake bakers in America. The cake bake case has actually been decided in the advantage of the cake baker, but notably, it was decided on a technicality. The Supreme Court has still not said whether you have the right to bake a fucking cake or not. And that's a fucking problem, let me tell you. That is massive. Because it means you, once you do business, you are bound to serve anyone you don't want to serve, even if your product is artistic or culinary in nature. Like, imagine, remove the cake aspect of this. Imagine people were starting to argue, Jeff, you're not serving the Asian community enough on your YouTube channel. You need to start talking about what's happening in the Asian world. Oh yeah, and we need to also insert a couple of Asian recipes in your book. I mean, this is where we're at. There's not much of a difference between a guy writing a cookbook and a guy baking cakes. It's art, it's culinary art, it's something that you put your heart into. It's an act of expression, and we still don't have a confirmation from the U.S. Supreme Court that it was legal to refuse to bake a cake. So, why is this complaint weak? So I believe we are in a framing here. We have a woman who knew that she wanted to get rejected from the RTTL Association, so that she can make the argument that her civil rights have been violated. Now, this is where we'll see the test of the quality of the setup that Arval has been putting together. So, the LLC, is it going to be judged as making an act of sale? It's not clear to me that it's even the case. And secondly, if it is an act of sale, there is an exception in the Fair Housing Act, which is for private clubs. And this, and Arval has designed the system so that precisely this LLC will fall under the exception of private clubs. So a private club can be just a bunch of friends who just sell to each other and who just allow each other to live on each other's land, or who build an LLC together to live together on that land. This is the format that Arval has been wanting. Now, in the complaint, there is not a sufficient allegation that would allow to conclude the LLC, by merely demanding that you be a member of RTTL, is effectively violating the Fair Housing Act, because they are not making this condition to a sale. They are making this condition to be part of the land that they still own. So it's it's not even a sale, really. It's a delegation of a living right. That's how I would see it. Which, by the way, is also the reason why I would never live on these compounds. I love what they do. I hope they succeed. But I'm too much of an individualist. I just cannot trust human beings. And to me, therefore, it would not be complete property. This is actually why I cannot live on an RTTL compound. It's that there is not a real sale happening, in my view. Now, they have used their farm because they believe it's protective for them, and I'm happy if that works to them. But to me, as an independent creator and thinker, I cannot be dependent on any sort of central entity. I could not live in a condominium with these owner associations. I flee this like the pest. They are dangerous. They will hurt you. And, you know, however much I would trust the people who are friends with Arval, my problem down the line is it's always a corporation. It's always replaceable. There's always a new board member. It always evolves into something else. And before you know it, you're completely overflown by leftists who think completely different from you. So the reason of the weakness of the complaint is that she starts with a whole set of maybe 3 or 4 pages, which are basically a full mainstream media description of what white nationalism is, in complete non-relationship to the case. So that would be a first layer of things that can be chopped by a competent lawyer. Motion to dismiss. This stuff is absolutely unrelated to Arval, to RTTL, or to the LLC. So it's like, white nationalism is the belief of racial superiority and blah, 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 and they want to reject everyone from America. That is ideological speculation that is being attributed to an ID. You're not talking about the defendants here. You're talking about an ID. Then she moves into allegations about training videos of RTTL. But again, these training videos, first, I'm not sure she's actually talking about training videos. I think that what may have happened is she's collected various speeches by people who are loosely associated with RTTL, and she has decided to attribute it to RTTL. In my experience, when I see content from RTTL, I do not see the statements that she reports in her complaint. So I think a lot of this will get kicked out before the trial because I don't think it's traceable to a corporate statement of RTTL. What she's probably done is she found, oh, this guy is associated to RTTL. And maybe, so what he says here on his Twitter account, we can maybe put it on the back of RTTL. I think she's extremely loose in these allegations, and if we have a fair judge and a competent, fair trial, I would expect these things to be completely barred. I believe there's lots of lies in there. There's also a lot of things that she puts in quotation mark, which are not official statements of RTTL. They appear to be, she's quoting, she's not even saying who she's quoting. But they would appear to be that she's quoting media stuff about RTTL. Now, RTTL cannot be held responsible for representations that are made precisely to frame them by leftist media. And if you have a competent judge and a competent system of justice, you would expect that all of these statements, which are not corporate statements of RTTL, must be dismissed. We must boil this down to what did RTTL say for real? How did they reject her? In fact, they rejected her basically by not contacting her again after her application. And on top of it, she has revealed that she didn't even intend to live there. Now, this is definitely a legal reason in itself that could hold. if you forget about all of the structure between RTTL and the LLC, even if she had come and said, I want to buy a share of the LLC, it's a perfectly valid reason to refuse a sale if the person doesn't want to live there. Because in intentional communities that want to build a world in a certain way, they can definitely decide, well, we don't accept external investors. We only accept people who intend to live here. So she's already revealed publicly in her complaint and in her interviews in the media that there is a fair basis on which the sale, even if it had been a sale, she didn't get to the sale. She didn't even get through being accepted as a member of RTTL. But that act of refusal was not an act of refusal for sale. But if there had been a sale opportunity, she could have been refused on the basis that she didn't intend to participate to the community that the LLC wants to build. By the way, I'm sure there's all sorts of white people who are refused sales on the basis that they don't intend to live there, because that is one of the conditions in the way they organize their community. You buy a share if you want to be present in the community. So all of these weaknesses go up to point 55. So that's the story, effectively. Now, at point 55, we see the acknowledgement of what is the actual structure and how she's ultimately not, she's not suing correctly and not for the right reasons. She got refused entry into an association. That's one thing. She didn't get refused a sale. There has not been a sale. There has not been a sale process. And the Fair Housing Act, let's not forget, is mostly a law that applies to announcements, an actual public sales process. It is not an act that is meant to legislate the behavior of private clubs. They have an explicit exception to it. And when you get to point 54, the LLC purchases the land for RTTL's all-white communities. RTTL distributes land to its members by selling shares of the LLC, which are tied to a particular plot of land. That is not correct. RTTL is not distributing those shares. RTTL is an association. The LLC has decided to make the membership to this association a requisite. So she inverts things in her reasoning and in her layout, because this inversion is precisely needed to make the case that the law was violated. Because a LLC can decide we're selling to people who are part of a certain club. She says, only members of RTTL's all-white association are eligible to buy land from the LLC. That is also a lie. There is probably some degree of racial diversity in RTTL. The only people who have said that this was an all-white community were the media that were trying to paint RTTL in a bad way. And as far as what Arval states when he appears publicly, he talks of European heritage. So to be in RTTL, you have to appreciate European heritage. That is the condition. And in fact, he has even mentioned that racial purity was not a criteria to enter the association. In point 55, she says, RTTL believes that the creation of the association and LLC is a key innovation that enables it to work around the Fair Housing Act. That is not something that Arval has said. Every time he's been in an interview on TMZ, the guy was saying, so you want to work around the law? And he said, well, we're not so much concerned about working around the law. We're concerned about respecting the law. That's what Arval has actually been doing. He's been setting up a system to the best of his ability to be in line with the law. It's not a crime to be trying to adhere to the law. Tide Fluid Imperator sends $15. Thank you so much. He says, have you ever been to Hyperborea, Switzerland? If not, why? Well, I wouldn't travel after I've been becoming a public person. I wouldn't travel because you lose so much rights, and I wouldn't enter a place like Europe where definitely they would try to give me trouble. They would try to restrict my movement. They might even deport me. Once you decide to be a public person, you have to give up those rights. You have to stay in the nation where you are, because at these borders, you have no rights, and you will be mistreated by these people, and they will do everything they can to mess your trip up. Now, were you asking about Switzerland? I've actually been to Switzerland back in my scientist days. I really enjoyed it. Switzerland is beautiful. I've been on a train that just, the train hangs at the border of a mountain, and it's like, and you're just super high, and you see the whole mountain below you. The trains across the mountains of Switzerland are absolute, it's a touristic attraction just to be carried by the train. It's fantastic. Beautiful mountains, and it was a beautiful trip. But I passed through to Switzerland. Effectively, I was at a big meeting of neuroscience that was happening there. Matt Bell. So in short, JF is saying that well, Matt Bell, you're going to have to stop with these themes, because every time I read a chat from you, there's some bad language in it. You're going to have to change your attitude, or I'm going to ban the next time. It's not that you're not that much of a problem, but it's like we are here on a YouTube channel, and you're always framing things in the most hateful ways, and I'm done with you. I'm tired. At this point, I'm done with the feds, really. It's like, Matt Bell, you've been sending me fetish emails for like 5 years. For 5 years, I've not responded to your fucking emails, and I've not fully read your regular chats, because they're always the most dark things you can say. I'm fucking done. Next time I see something like this from you, I will ban you, and I will be free from you. And I think I've already blocked you on email. It's like, can't we just get rational conversation that doesn't seek to tint me the same way TMZ has tinted RTTL? I'm so tired. I'm so tired of people like you. Fuck you. Yeah, so she says, RTTL Association qualifies for the private club exception to the Fair Housing Act. And two, RTTL's LLC does not engage in the sale or rental of real estate, and therefore is not subject to the Fair Housing Act. RTTL claims that a private club can manage land according to its own principles, and that upon joining the association, members change their legal status from that of a public person to that of a private membership association individual, waiving application of state or federal civil rights law. So this is the system that has been put together by RTTL, and I believe it holds together. It holds together. And she doesn't really have an argument about why it doesn't hold together. She says, the private club exceptions to the Arkansas Fair Housing Act and Federal Fair Housing Acts, however, only allow a private club that, as an incident to its primary purpose, provides lodging that it owns or operates for other than a commercial purpose. But this is exactly what Arval has put together. RTTL is providing lodging that it owns, or RTTL or the LLC are providing lodging that they own or operate for other than a commercial purpose. They are not engaged in the commercialization of this land. They are not engaged in trying to cash in on the sale of this land. So the Fair Housing Act exception exactly applies to RTTL. They are not trying to cash in. They're trying to put together a European way of living that favors European culture. Therefore, it is not commercial. RTTL is not engaged in the commercialization of those lands. They are incidentally giving these lands rights to live on for lodging purposes as part of another mission, which is the defense of European heritage. They are not trying to make the most cash they can from the sales of each plot. And therefore, it seems to me that this setting has been set by Arval in the exact way that it is recommended and designed in the Fair Housing Act. This is not someone trying to cash in or making a commercial thing out of it. To the contrary, they have decommercialized this land effectively. They have turned it into a land that's effectively unusable for other things than their purpose, where they won't be able to cash in on it. Because they're not looking to sell it. They're looking to live on it. That is precisely why these exceptions have been put together. It's because there are various uses of a land, and not everyone is trying to make money from lands. Some people are interesting for these. Some people are interested in their lands to be continuing the prosperity of their descendants. Some people are interested in, at putting lands at the service of artistic missions or cultural missions of various sorts. It is only when you engage in the commerce of these lands for profit that you are subject to the Fair Housing Act. Eric Orwell, Arval himself, has sent a super chat. He says, if JF agrees with our legal reasoning, then I have no doubt that we'll win. Well, I wouldn't necessarily trust me, but thank you. Thank you for the trust. In fact, I do attempt to approach these questions from an objective perspective. And it's as simple as this. The objective perspective is as follows. RTTL doesn't really have any involvement in this, should be easily excluded from this case, or will have to hold up to the end of this case on the basis that there's some sort of conspiracy with the LLC, sure. But down the line, whether it's RTTL or the LLC that gets at the final trial, down the line, this is a private club that is not commercializing land. And therefore, it is under the exception that she even acknowledges right there at point 57. Point 58. RTTL does not provide lodging in the context of its land sales, and its use of land is not an incident to its primary purpose. RTTL's central mission is to provide permanent homes for white people. Untrue. Untrue and denied. That is not what RTTL's mission statement is. It is, I mean, you have to go to their website, you have to follow their videos, you have to check their announcement. RTTL's goal, as stated, has always been to push European heritage. And if their goal was only to provide lodging or lands, they wouldn't have that many members. What about all these members of RTTL that don't have lodging? I mean, I don't know what's the number. Do they have thousands, maybe tens of thousands? There's so many members of RTTL that just support the European culture defense. They are not interested in buying lands and they don't have lands. Is she alleging that they're getting defrauded? No, it's RTTL is about culture and it has many members that don't have lands and that don't hope to have any. RTTL, she says, RTTL also purports purports to be exempt from the Fair Housing Act because its LLC does not engage in sales or rental of real estate. However, when an RTTL member moves into one of its communities, RTTL sells them a share of the LLC that is associated with a particular parcel of that land, and the LLC allocates that land to the share's owner for their own and for their indefinite use. RTTL's bylaws spell out what the lot partitions are and why shares are associated with which lot of land. The value of the share is tied to the value of the associated land, not the percentage of LLC. So here, I do not necessarily have full understanding of the details of how they set it up, but I believe she's wrong. From my understanding, RTTL does not allocate the plot of land. RTTL has designed bylaws, which come as a suggestion. You could use these bylaws for your company. You can start a company. I can start a company tomorrow morning called JFG Company. And I can use the RTTL bylaws as they are proposed. It's a template. It's like some of these websites that give you a template legal document to form your company or whatever. So it's a template. The fact that this LLC has decided to adopt these bylaws is their own decision. Therefore, they are the one attributing the plot of land. Now, it seems to me that they are attributing this plot of land in a non-commercial way. It seems to me that they are attributing this plot of land as an incident to their pursuit of European life, which is exactly the exception described in the Fair Housing Act. Its primary purpose, therefore, the primary purpose of the RTTL system is to defend European culture. The LLC is owning land as a private club, and as a private club, they want to live among people who happen to be part of that association. Seems to me that it's pretty airtight. Now, because it's airtight doesn't mean you're going to win necessarily, because the justice system is absolutely corrupt. And I don't even know whether you can get fairness in Arkansas even. That's how bad it is. Now, I hope that you get the best of luck, but it's all about, ultimately, it all boils down to the judge and the appeals. There's probably going to be appeals. And I believe we are in a mature enough America at this point. I believe that 20 years ago, this would have been very hard. At the height of liberalism penetration of the justice system, but I believe there is a pushback here, and we are at a good moment where you might have, you know, a court of appeals and even the Supreme Court saying, you know what? Fuck this. We're not going to start micromanaging white people on their use of private club acquired lands. And that is the beautiful outcome we want. And the moment is ripe for this. Which is why I have enormous faith that we can get something very good from it. I do hope that people support Arval in the deepest way they can. That he has a GoFundMe still active, a GiveSendGo, sorry, still active. He is at $122,000 US, the goal at $200,000 US, being hosted by Peter Zier, who is one of the defendants in this lawsuit. I am very hopeful that the very high ups, Court of Appeal or Supreme Court levels, will look at this and will say, we have to stop. We have to stop micromanaging the rights of people to get together. Because that is what the nightmare of civil rights era is giving us. It's a micromanagement nightmare, and it's ultimately a bar on freedom of association, just freedom of doing what you want and living with people you like. If we can build such a thing as a family in a house, then certainly we should be able to build something like a family, and something like a street. And the civil rights conception of America has been completely imposing an arbitrary barrier there. It's like, do I violate the Fair Housing Common, the Fair Housing Act, when I decide to sell my house to my cousin because I feel that my cousin is the best guy to take over my house and I want my house to have some continuity within my family? Is are parents violating the Fair Housing Act when they give their house to their children rather than to a person of a random racial constitution? Like, it's untenable, this limit that has been imposed by the civil rights. And the reason they were able to hold this in place is precisely this exception that they allowed, which is, yeah, there is such a thing as these private purposes, which we will not get into. So they solely applied the Fair Housing Act to financial transactions and people looking for enriching themselves. But they have acknowledged by this law that there were other purposes than enrichment. And to me, it doesn't look like the LLC or RTTL or any of these people involved, they don't particularly look like they're looking to cash in on this. They're not particularly looking for public propositions of sales. They are very private and they are operating like a private club that has a purpose. That purpose is not the sale of land. John Drake says, oh, apologies, JF. Premier Smith screwed us. I was wrong. She is playing tricks. I didn't watch her address until after the show yesterday. I've commented hot on this, just listening to a few minutes of what she had to say. I'm still not absolutely sure where this is headed, the independence of Alberta. It doesn't look like she's very enthusiastic about it. Eventually, we're going to need, if we want to be serious about sovereignty in Alberta, we're going to need public speakers that are much more dedicated to the cause than her, because obviously she seems to be on that very fence-sitting state where she's like, I do want the Albertans to express themselves, but I want to stay in a strong Canada. Well, okay, then we need to have someone else that would carry the sovereignty of Alberta forward. Because to go from 25% support for sovereignty to 50, you need people to cause things. You need people to start engaging in a hostile manner with the federal government. You need people to lead negotiations that are tough, that are demanding true concessions from the federal government. And you're not going to get this if you start. If you start the negotiation with, I want to stay in a strong Canada, you have to do like Quebec. How did Quebec become so powerful in the social welfare state that Canada has become? It's by demanding stuff constantly and being annoying to the federal government and waging power, like through the Bloc Québécois. If your negotiation position is, oh, we're so desperate to stay in Canada, we love you so much, you don't have leverage, and it's not going to lead to anything. And it's very worrying, because then it means that the leader of Alberta, Danielle Smith, no matter how much I like her social conservative approach to politics, and I love being in Alberta, but she doesn't have the tool to put us in a position where we can escape the nightmare that Canada is. And that's very sad. Plapidas says, Jeff, she has to play the middle to survive for now. Yeah, but my goal is not just surviving politically. My goal is, let us put ourselves on a path of liberty and sovereignty. I don't see it right now. I don't feel her right now. I would be extremely enthusiastic if she could be more pursuing a more radical program of sovereignty. I'm just not seeing it, though. I'm not saying I have any alternative to propose. I don't know much about Albertan politics. I don't know who can rise up to the task. I don't know if that person would be rejected from the regular Conservative Party and have to start their own party. It's all very complicated. But at least she's not completely closed, and so she's not in terrible territory. I'm not saying she needs to be destroyed or replaced. But the enthusiasm is lacking. That's where I stand. All right, I'm going to continue this weekend writing White People Food. It's going to be an amazing book in the $20 range, $20 to $30 range for the digital version. We are looking at about $67.99 for the paperback. We're looking at $79.99 for the hardcover. Those are the prices that I've been calculating based on estimates from the current size of the book. I have to readjust, tighten the centering of certain elements. I'm working on the last ride before we can get to a first print. Plepides says, it's like you said yesterday, it won't happen overnight. It may take one or two referendums. The current question will allow a strong social signal to be expressed. Absolutely. So that is a progress, and that is absolutely desirable. Much love, everyone, and I will see you all next week.